This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
ACC football kickoff with Duke head coach Mike Elko. Welcome.
Yeah, good
first,
to be here.
First one. Feels like you've paid your coaching dues.
Yeah.
How would you describe your ascension to where you are?
Yeah, it's been a great journey for me. I've been at a lot of different levels. You know, I tell recruits this all the time. You know, you tell me the guy that started at the Merchant Marine Academy and wound up at Texas A&M and became the head coach at Duke, right? So it's been a unique journey for sure. Learned a lot of things along the way, met a lot of great people along the way, and excited to be here for this opportunity.
You've worked for some super head coaches too, coming from working with Jimbo Fisher, Brian Kelly. I mean, we have incredible respect for Dave Clawson as a tactician, somebody who's created something really cool at Wake Forest. You were there.
Yeah.
You spent a lot of time with them. What do you take from each of them?
Yeah, I think, you know, each of them have their own strengths and weaknesses. I think that, you know, Dave obviously taught me so much. I was with him for so long, mm-hmm. and I think he's probably the one that I'm most modeled after from an organization standpoint and how we do things. But then, you know, you learn from Brian kind of how to run a high-level mm-hmm. program at a school like Notre Dame and everything that entails. And then you go down and spend 4 years with Jimbo competing against the best of the best in that league and that division. And, you know, you kind of take away what it's like competing every single day and recruiting on the field. And you know, and so you take little pieces from all of them and you try to mold that into who you are and your philosophy.
All right, two questions. First is, did Dave Clawson turn you into a Talking Heads fan?
No. Nope.
Wait.
Nope. So Dave and I are aligned in a lot of ways. I think he would He would share with you very quickly that from a culture personality standpoint,
right.
We probably couldn't be more apart.
Well, when I found out that he was into the Talking Heads, I'm like, that I just can't. Like, yeah. I like the Talking Heads. And what's your musical?
So, like, he'd be Talking Heads, I'd be Jay-Z, right? I think
that's, oh, really?
How, we would, ooh, that's how he would go.
Echoes well on the recruiting trail. And at Texas A&M, did you ever have to pet or watch Reveille, the dog?
I never did, although my daughter spent a lot of time trying
really?
To get around her. Yeah, my daughter's a big dog fan, so.
We all are in my house. All right, you and I might have asked you this question when we first spoke, right after you got the job. But when David Cutcliffe took over, I called it a startup. Mm-hmm. There was really nothing there. It seems like there's the bones of a solid program there. Give me a sense of the state of the program as you take over.
Yeah, I think if you look at the infrastructure, I think there's a much stronger foundation in place for me than there has been for any Duke head coach before me. I think what we were able to do under Coach Cut, facilities-wise, and just trying to get this thing to some level, right, that was competitive in this conference. I think they did some amazing things, put it together. And now our mantra is just kind of like, let's finish the job. You know, we put a big investment in. We got this thing off the ground. You know, we were able to show some proof of concept through a 6-7 year stretch,
yeah,
where we were very successful. Here's some little things where maybe we came up short, and let's plug those holes and let's figure out how to really finish what we started when he got there.
What kind of support have you gotten from the community? I know before Coach Cutcliffe took over, there was a huge push by former players to make drastic changes in how things were done. So is that support obvious to you? Are you getting that from past players and basically the surrounding community?
Yeah, I think we're trying to attack those areas for support. So I don't know, like, the history of it or where it comes from, but – you know, we know Durham is huge for us. If we want to be able to put people in the stands, you know, we have 7,000 students on campus. You know, we got a 40,000 seat stadium. You do the math, and we're going to need Durham to be a big piece of who we are. Our former players are the soul of our program, right?
Right.
They've put so much blood and sweat equity into Duke and have seen it through some lean years, some good years, have stuck around and been part of it. And so you'd love to unite them together as we try to build this thing forward. And so I think we've just gone out and attacked those two groups. And, you know, I think obviously they're supportive because we're making an effort to go out and be around them.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance, depending on what kind of other income you have. You could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But
you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda.
The foundation for any good football team is on both lines of scrimmage. Offensive line, I don't know if it's more important. It's they're equally as important. Where is your program right now on both lines of scrimmage?
Yeah, I'm excited to watch us in fall camp. You know, we have made some tremendous gains in the strength and conditioning area this summer. I think we've done some really nice things. I think our offensive line's got some experience. We've got some guys coming back. You know, we've got two that have played a lot of football, Jacob Monk and Graham Barton. Defensively, we've got Dwayne Carter down here with us today, and he's played a lot of football. But I think we've become a bigger, stronger group, and so it'll be exciting to watch where we've gotten to this fall.
I'm going to talk to Jacob Monk. It's interesting is that I was very good friends with his uncle.
Okay.
Quincy, this is going to make you laugh, and I hope it does. I used to work out with Quincy Monk.
Sure.
So
I can see it.
You made me. Never mind. Yeah, so I'm curious just to sit down and spend some time with him. Quarterback, that has been – it's kind of the weird – Duke has had some really good quarterbacks of late, Daniel Jones in the NFL. Where is the quarterback position? Are you up in the air with choices? Month and a half away from the season?
We've got two young kids who have a lot of talent who I think got thrown into the fire in the spring, mm-hmm. you know, learning a new system, learning a new way that we wanted to play football. And so now I think, you know, we've got to see some growth. And we've got to see some consistency in fall camp. And I think the guy that can provide the most consistency, you know, is the guy that becomes the starter. I think Riley Leonard has shown signs that he can do it. I think Jordan Moore has shown signs that he can do it. But, you know, we just got to get one of them to be a little bit more consistent player day in, day out.
Can you see yourself using two quarterbacks?
I think that's a possibility. I do. I think, you know, they both bring some different skill sets to the table.
Right.
You know, I think every coach's dream is that one guy comes out in fall camp and just takes it and runs with it and clearly becomes the guy. And if that happens, great. And we'll figure out how to make that work. And if that's not how it plays out, then we'll figure out how to make that work too.
Mike Elko, Duke head coach, is joining us here at ACC Football Kickoff. Two more things. One, the area of your team that you are the most confident in is what?
Yeah, I think probably the offensive line. I think that's the group. You know, I think we got a good nucleus coming back. I think we added three solid pieces out of the transfer portal. You know, that's got to be the heart and soul of who mm-hmm. we are. We've got to be able to take the pressure off the young quarterback with some protection, with the run game. You know, we've got to be mm-hmm. able to do those things to make it easier, you know, for a first-time starter back there. And so I think that's the group I'm cautiously optimistic can help with that.
And now there's two things that have really taken over college sports, not just football. One is, you just mentioned, the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness. So has the transfer portal been a positive for you? And what has been the impact of NIL?
Yeah, I mean, I think the transfer portal is just what it is. There's no reason to even think about good, bad, positive, negative. It's just a piece of what we're doing now, right? And so we've got to do a great job in our own program of building a culture that people want to be part of so you can retain players.
Right.
And we've got to be active and aware of who's out there that can fit us. I think when you're trying to improve quickly, obviously having that as an option, bringing in a senior who's played 4 years of college football, you know, that's a good opportunity, right? And so it certainly has helped us this year. NIL, you know, it's interesting, right? Because you certainly have felt for years that our players deserve to get a piece of this mm-hmm. big pie, right? There's this enormous pie out there, and it never felt right that they didn't have a piece of it. You know, you'd love there to be a little bit of regulation. You'd love there to be a little bit of a industry standard to how we do it. You know, and it's just not there right now, and that's okay, and we'll figure out how to navigate it. But we're certainly going to do what we can at Duke to get our kids the opportunities that they deserve.
So on the drive back, what's playing on the stereo? Or the kids wearing headphones and they're listening to what they want to listen to?
So we do country as just kind of like the catch-all.
Really?
Yeah, so it's okay. I got a lot of wide verse in music. So we can go country, we can go Broadway, we can go game day. Yeah,
Broadway.
We can do a lot of different things in the Elko household. So.
All right, to dream the impossible dream.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Mike Elko, head coach at Duke. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Adam.
I think the show tunes thing caught me a little bit by surprise. All right, when we come back, it's time to sit down with the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, Jim Phillips. We will do that on from Operation Kickoff next. We would be talking about getting rid of divisions and all of that. And then last month, the world ends. Southern Cal, UCLA, make the move. What was the first thing you thought about when you heard that news?
I thought about our conference, thought about maybe what is the next move, what should we be thinking about, what could add value to the ACC. I also felt badly for the Pac-12, because we went through it a year ago with what happened with the two Big 12 schools. And then just really started to go to work, honestly. I had just landed to see my family. I'd been on the road 17 days, just all work-related, and was going to enjoy some time around July 4th. And then I had a little league trip with my son to Louisville for a week. And then the third was going to be go to Dublin, Ireland for Kevin White, the former Duke's athletic director. He had his 50th wedding anniversary and retirement party, where it was a surprise of those that had worked with him before. So,
right.
So I went 0-3. All of them were canceled. No July 4th, no Little League. So my son got his mom to take him to the father-son Little League trip. And then Kevin, I called Kevin, just said, you know, after the fact, I just said,
right.
I hope you know I was supposed to be there. He did. And just had bunkered in and started to work on you know, what would be right for the ACC as we move forward.
I know you've talked a lot about everything is on the table. So when you say that, I mean, it's hard to look at the landscape and say, well, this school would be good for the league because maybe they're in a different time zone. So are we talking about the potential for expansion or... I mean, I'll let you kind of elaborate where you can and what that means.
I think you have to be open to all avenues. If it has a chance to create value, which at the end of the day seems to be what's driving these other decisions and what we all need resource-wise for our schools. And so you have to look at those types of options. But then I think you also have the ability to think differently as other options and to flush those out. You have a wonderful asset, we do in the ACC, with our network. And so how do we bring additional value to the network, right? Mm-hmm. Are there games, are there events, are there scheduling partnerships that may take you and allow you to get to some markets you haven't been in and
right.
to, again, monetize the network off of that. So you're looking at a variety of ways to move forward from an Atlantic Coast Conference perspective. Our board's been fantastic and they've been engaged. Our ADs have been, again, fantastic and they've been engaged, and we're putting together and charting the, you know, options and potential possibilities for us to consider.
What was the mood in the room when all of this stuff happened? Obviously, you weren't in there. There wasn't a room, and everybody heard the news at the same time. But was anger, did they feel like, well, why didn't this happen for us? But can you kind of explain the mindset of some of these people in the room, especially the schools that are looking maybe in their area, and they feel like they might be getting left behind financially?
Yeah. I don't think there's a variety of emotions when you first hear it. Is that accurate? Is that true? And
right.
then, you know, why? And And are there other options? Are there other kind of moves that are going to make? So I think you process what's occurred, and then you quickly go to what should we do? What should we be doing? Mm-hmm. And what's the right path forward for us? And having all of us experience it this summer before, I think everybody turned the page pretty quickly and thought about, you know, what's next for us.
I think last summer with Texas and Oklahoma jumping to the SEC, it caused you to get in an alliance, I think you guys called it an alliance, yeah, with Kevin Warren, George Kliavkov at the Pac-12. Did that ultimately, just there's no other way to, did that backfire?
I don't think so at all. Here's what I would say. During those 12 months, I think we got a lot done. I really do, in a short period of time. We got some NCAA issues and legislation passed, mm-hmm, whether it was, the dissemination of the, or the destruction of the conference divisions. We've got, mm-hmm, legislation passed for additional days of spring and fall competition for football, as far as practice, not competition, but practice. We did some really good stuff in the social justice area, including the trip last weekend to Montgomery and Selma, which was, yeah, terrific to find out about, just voting and voting rights in our country and what happened in Selma back in 65. Culminated at the Pettus Bridge.
Right.
We did some mental health things with our student athletes and some leadership development. So there were things that we really had, I think, done a good job on, and some scheduling, some football and basketball scheduling in the years to come. But at the end of the day, I think we all understand that conferences have to do what they feel is,
right,
best. And
it's
so
business.
It is. And so that took place, and you move on from that.
I'm kind of channeling a scene from Godfather,
yeah, yeah,
at this point. It's just business. The grant of rights, I know you talked about it today, in that you used the example of Texas and Oklahoma haven't tried to get out early. Southern Cal and UCLA haven't, at this point, tried to get out early. So the grant of rights must be binding. You must be pretty confident that, because the television contract, it doesn't have just a few more years left on it. It has 14 more years left on it. So you must be pretty confident that the grant of rights is binding. Otherwise, I would imagine there'd be a lot more panic in the room, no?
That's part of it. But I also believe, listening and talking with all of our schools, they love the ACC. Mm-hmm. They believe in the ACC. I think they believe that it has, tremendous value, not only in the past, but moving forward. I think they're all committed together with trying to find whatever the best solution is for us to close some of that revenue gap that we're facing and feel. We do have, over the next several years, some really good revenue projections based on the distribution of Comcast and okay, what we were able to do. So I don't look at it as a fractured group. I look at it as a group that understands what's occurred and wants to act and move forward in the best way possible.
Is there trust among conference commissioners based on everything that's happened? I understand why there might not be, because of, like, last year, I think Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby were in the same meeting room while there were negotiations with Texas and Oklahoma. So from the outside, the perception is that, how can you trust these people? Can you walk me through that?
We got to work through that. We just have to.
Right.
I mean, we had a lot more at stake than our, some of our personal feelings on this. We're supposed to be leading the enterprise. And so we'll have to have some more discussions like we did last year.
Right.
And I'm sure we will with what occurred this past year. And we're going to have to come together in order to effectively lead and develop some of the, or execute on some of the expectations that are placed on our shoulders. So it's a tough period, right, after what we've just experienced. And people are going to feel with the way that they want to feel on the matter. But in the end, you have to try to do the best you can to not take it personally, as it sounds easier said than done, but try not to, and try to focus on that you have a responsibility. We all have a responsibility to move the enterprise forward, and harboring feelings and emotions and stuff may not be the best way to do that.
Well, let's talk about ESPN real quick. They certainly have an interest in the success of the ACC. So is there an appeal, or has ESPN initiated conversations with you about how do we help you get to where you need to be? Has there been any discussions like that with ESPN?
ESPN's been, they've been terrific, and we're partners, right? Mm-hmm. We're partners in this network.
Right.
So they want us to do well, and obviously we want them to do well because it's mutually beneficial. So we've been engaged with conversations with them, and we'll continue to do that. And we'll again, try to come together with some of these options and to see what may have the best value for us to consider going forward.
All right, so you were an AD in the Big Ten at Northwestern, and I'm just going to try to use random figures here. So the ACC distributes $35 million per school, just again, round figure, probably a little bit more. The Big Ten, this go-round was probably between 50 and 55, but that number is going to go up. If you were an AD at Northwestern, what would you do with $80 million that you couldn't really do with, let's just say, $40 million?
I'm not sure. I would say...
I'm just wondering, at some point, that should be enough.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about that. Yeah. Because they've made it, they've made do. Clemson has made do with whatever they're getting paid right now. I'm curious. What would you do with the extra money?
No, you'll get me on with you next time, and I'll have a better answer than this time.
I mean, I was just talking about this. Almost every big time college program has a better locker room than every NFL team. That seems weird to me. Like, you don't really need that, but we have it because. That's like, why does my kid have two controllers? He's only one person. I want to ask you about headquarters. My idea. Mm-hmm. And Greensboro, Charlotte, Orlando, fine. An RV, a Madden cruiser, if you will. And headquarters is wherever you wake up
in
the morning.
That. Yeah, I like that. Maybe I should bring that to the board. I don't know what I'm going to do with the staff. I don't know how many we can fit in the RV.
Let everybody work from home. We have good internet.
But then my mind goes to the RV in Breaking Bad, and that's not a good visual for me with Walt back there, you know, doing whatever Walt does in the back of the RV. But I hadn't heard that before. And the Madden Cruiser is another one that was just epic. And what a wonderful person and legend John Madden was, and still today is in our eyes. And a guy that didn't like to fly, right? Mm-hmm. But he never missed an event, got to all the games, and was so happy when he was in the Madden Cruiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because my
great way to live life.
No offense to anybody who works in the Greensboro office, but I mean, there'd be plenty of room for Amy on the RV.
Yeah, Amy could drive the RV, Alan. That's where we should have her driving. Wow.
So I've never wondered what the big deal was with headquarters, because other than, you know, the office, nothing. Yeah. You don't play games there, right? Yeah. We don't play games at the at HQ.
Personally, I think it's a good idea.
Do it.
It would be great. What a scene. Where is the ACC headquarters today? Right?
That'd make great content, by the way.
It would. You'd just be driving around from campus to campus. Headquarters today is in Coral Gables. Next week, find out where headquarters will be. We're in Chestnut Hill. Now we're in Winston-Salem. Now we're on Franklin Street, parked out in front of Sutton's. Why not? Let's get an RV. That'll be our conference
Conference HQ.